If you're 22 and you have a decent job, start looking to house hack this week. You might have a girlfriend, you might have a dog, does not matter. Start house hacking because you need a place to live, and why not? You might as well offset that cost of living.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hey, today on the show, the naked truth of real estate investing, I have Jonathan Farber. He is 27 years old. He actually lives in Raleigh, in my hometown. He's a world traveler, New York, Florida. He's in Pinehurst at the moment, playing some golf. And like I said, he's 27 years old and he started house hacking and Airbnb arbitrage when he was in his early 20s and just quit his corporate America job, and he's financially independent. So he can have a lifestyle, travel, and buy more real estate. So he's also really good at doing a process of systems and hiring a virtual assistants and just outsourcing a lot of his day-to-day items. So he's actually really good at creating those systems and process, and I'll ask him a few things like that. He loves to play golf. He played golf at Hofstra University, and he's definitely a good golf player. He's got a podcast, Millennials Millionaires Through Real Estate. Gets about 2,000 downloads per week. So one of the fastest growing podcasts. There'll be some social media links for him, some LinkedIn accounts at the end of the show notes. So let's welcome Jonathan Farber to The Naked Truth.
You got it, man. I'll say this. You said like been following more on social media, man. Not to make this like a backslapping contest, but dude, every time you've been posting a lot more too, and you're the Facebook group I've been seeing growing a lot, and the in-person meetup and now this, but man, it's always like, especially this could be a good theme of this conversation too, man, of like being around the right people. I know masterminds matter to you and coaches and just surround yourself with good friends and stuff, but like even just seeing you posting and other people that, like we know, like John Blant, other guys in Raleigh, Ryan Daigle, like it's just motivating, man. Like to see you post your deals or your meetup or your group and like the growth. And so I got to just say, it's been cool to see yours as well, because you've been pushing pretty hard lately, like more so to grow digital. And you've been doing the deals obviously for a while, but yeah, that's been a focus of ours for a little while now, probably like the last 15 months, trying to grow, get the word out, just do stuff and document it so that people can see it.
You've been doing well, because when I met you, you had maybe a little bit over 1,000 people in your Facebook group, and now it's like quadrupled. I don't know. You're above 3,000. So, and that's in pretty quick, because you started getting
next 12 months.
Yeah.
But I'll say this, and this could be good for anyone out there that's like maybe in a job or maybe kind of trying to figure it out. Facebook groups are amazing, man. Yeah. And for me, I felt I had to hide a little bit what I was putting out, my message, because I still had a job. So I didn't want to be posting too much on my like public LinkedIn, my public Facebook. So that Facebook group is a good way to really build like the big cliche word, thought leadership. But it's good because you're at the center of something, man. And then, you know, you layer a meetup on top of it, like you've been doing, and pretty cool. And then, you know, if you ask people politely to add some of their friends and maybe do a giveaway or two, like I'm sure you know, and get your group out there, man, like it's cool what happens. And then it leads to all these different opportunities of finding deals or finding money or starting like a paid group or selling like a product. Like it's just funny what kind of happens with that unexpectedly.
That's a great point you bring up, just how you got started as well, and you were working and you didn't want to post too much. So why don't you tell folks a little bit about that? How do you kind of get started if you have a job and you're trying to manage both sides? So go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on this mission lately, like this renegade mission, man. So here's the deal. I was in corporate for 6 years. And for me, my goal was financial freedom by 30. So I bought my first rental when I was 22 through a strategy some of you guys might know called house hacking. And for your younger listeners, it's a must if you really, like for me, want to try to balance between saving money and making money. And I like that strategy because it's down in your cost of living. Plus you can make money and you could turn it into a rental. It doesn't require a lot of money either. You buy something with low money down because you're going to live in it, rent out the other rooms or the other units, and then you live for free, maybe make money to live. And you could do one of those a year, turn it into a rental behind you. And like, it's just a good way to get started. It's like training wheels for real estate. So for me, I was like, all right, I can handle that. That's a good start into the game. I didn't grow up around real estate people. My family still until this past year thought I was insane for doing any of this stuff. But my whole approach, Javi, to your listeners are, is to not lose the job, but use the job. So don't quit, but use them the way that they use you. Because banks, they put your name on the bottom of the pile when you don't have that strong, stable W-2 until you're making the money that like you make, okay? Then maybe banks will talk to you again. But for everyone else just starting out their career, young bucks, if you don't have a job, a bank won't lend you money to do a 1-4 unit deal, you know, or to buy a primary or to buy that single family home investment in the middle of the country or wherever you want to buy for cash flow. So for me, that was like the message that kind of grew. And that actually, I was checked out of my job, even though I was doing pretty well with it, but I was re-energized to do well with it when I felt like I had this reason to keep working harder and making more money so I could buy more real estate and then keep adding cash flow. And then finally, for me, when I hit the point where I was making more than enough to cover my living expenses through some regular rentals, through some Airbnbs, doing some of the wholesale stuff, course we launched, which was making some money, then that was a point where I really took my foot off the gas from corporate. And even still, this is kind of a controversial take, but I'm like, I'm not even going to quit. I'm just going to wait for them to fire me because I could still get health insurance. I could still get base. No one's going to notice, man. Like, I don't need to tell you, corporate is a joke, especially these technology companies. Dude, people just stopped working 5 years ago and no one even notices because it's just so bloated and it's so non-performance based. It's so bureaucratic and political. So it's like, okay, maybe that's not so great, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to at least stay until I max out my residential debt. And then the week that I maxed that out was my last week in corporate. And then now, man, I don't like the word retired is really good for clickbait, you know, and it's cool. Like everyone wants to say it. I like to work. I'd be bored on a beach after like 20 minutes. So for me now, it's like, all right, I'm going to take a little time off. And I'm in Pinehurst right now. I'm trying to just work on my golf game a little bit. But dude, I like to work. So, you know, now for me, it's going to be back to, you know, building up either the wholesale business or the Airbnb business or maybe Airbnb arbitrage. But from a high level, man, that's my view. If you have a job, use that job to get more real estate. And if you're in sales, you definitely don't want to change that job because you lose your 2-year kind of history if you change jobs in you're in a sales or commission role. So use it, or if you really hate it, change jobs, buy as much as you can. And then sure, or if you're just a complete throw risk, you know, out the window, then you could do it. But for me, I wanted a little bit more stability before I kind of just went out into the cold. I guess from a high level, that's me, Javi.
Hey, that's good because it's no one size fits all, but you explained it very well what kind of worked for your personality, right? Every investor has their own personality. And it's good to kind of see how somebody did it. And working in corporate for 6 years. And what the biggest thing that I got was, wasn't going to quit. I was going to wait till they fired me, right? So it just reminded me, I have this, they're older and you know, they're not that happily married. We're like, why don't you just get divorced? You know, she's like, hell no, I'd just rather him die. Because if he dies, I keep everything. If I get divorced, I keep half. So I just, that kind of hit me, right? Let them fire you, don't quit. And I don't know how those two came together, but that's what the thought that came to mind.
Hey, that's hilarious, man. Yeah.
This is the naked truth. So I'm going to ask you right off the bat then, next question.
Yeah.
What is the biggest mistake you've done, you've committed, like as far as real estate? What do you think is something that you've done and said, dang, I should not have done that?
Partner with the wrong people. And I give a little bit more detail on that, man. But like first started out, I confused a partner that brought something to the table with someone that brought moral support. And it's a lonely game and it's a scary game when you're by yourself in this, just starting out. And I don't need to tell you, man, you said it on my podcast, something I still think about of partnering with people. And would you rather have a small 10% of a watermelon or 100% of a grape? And, you know, I think about it too, of like strategic partnerships, but I partnered, actually, I did this twice. I guess it takes two times to get something through my head sometimes, man. I partnered two times with people that I was friendly with. First time it was complete, like strategic partnership. It was just, you're a beginner, I'm a beginner, you know, let's come together. We can figure this out together. Horrible idea because one side starts doing more than the other in this case. And it just wasn't a good fit. Resentment started building and it was just like, why are we partnered? You know, like we didn't for a reason. The second one, I actually just misjudged the person that I thought they were bringing something to the table and they weren't. And in both cases, in the first one, we had to just sell the property. And in the second one, I bought the person out. And at the time, it really sucked. Like it was painful and it was weird. It got weird with those because we were beginners in business and I'm still a beginner to some extent. You know, I have a lot to learn, but that was one now that my whole takeaway from it was, is I needed to understand more about myself. I'm a big, like you're, dude, someone I really look up to in this space for this. You're big picture, you're visionary. You know, you hire people to execute on certain things where you're not good. You're great at relationships and raising money. And, you know, I see a lot of myself kind of in that of kind of coming together with bringing different people. But in the second case, we were too similar in that sense. And the problem was we were both looking at each other like, who's going to do this thing? You know, I don't want to do it. You don't want to do it either. And it wasn't good. You know, like that was a problem. So now my whole thing is, all right, I have a little better understanding of myself and I have a better understanding of what I need to kind of come to a transaction for it to happen. And yeah, those were really painful mistakes that I definitely would have, if I could go back in time, I would just tell myself not to do either of them, or just do them myself, you know, and now I kind of know a little better.
All right. So which brings me to the second question, what would you do to avoid that? Or what would you tell somebody, right, that might be stepping into that same mistake? What would you say?
I would throw ego out the window, man. Okay. Kind of, again, bringing it back to the conversation we had, like it's such a common thing. And I still have it. So I don't want to say like, oh my God, like I was such an inexperienced, like ego, like thinking you need to have 100% of something for it to work. And thinking that like, I just want to be able to say, this is mine. I want to post about it, or I want to, you know, it's my thing. But I think I probably would have looked to partner with someone who they brought all the experience and maybe I brought all the money. And at the time I would have never done that because I was just like, No, like I discredited someone's experience and I let ego tell me that I could do it just as easily, which is just ridiculous. And I probably would have done something like that. Like I would have done maybe a multifamily deal or maybe like a joint venture deal in the middle of the country or somewhere, a cash flow deal. And I could have maybe brought the money and they could have brought the experience, or maybe we could have worked something out like that. Or I would have just found maybe more of like a mentor by bringing some value and kind of learn more about like the tactics that I didn't really understand. Cause in those cases, we did it like we tried to assign responsibilities, but we didn't know what actually had to be done. So there were all these pop-ups that kept happening. And it was like, who's going to do that? So I think ultimately I would have either partnered with someone that had more experience by bringing them kind of like money or a deal, or found a mentor by bringing them value or paying them to then kind of help educate me on like the steps and tactics to do it a little bit earlier.
Well, yeah, that's definitely... Definitely partnerships can be a challenge, right? Especially when you have, you know, money in the line, and especially if you're both new, if you don't set the expectations from day one, like, hey, what are you in charge of? What am I in charge of? It can get a little challenging, right? Everybody's happy and everybody's making money. And then it hits the fan and you're like, who shit is that? That's not mine. You know? So
yeah,
it can get tough. But one key point you just mentioned was, hey, maybe paying a mentor or hiring somebody, or just kind of getting some like counsel from somebody with experience. Sometimes you got to pay for that. Maybe you know somebody that can give it to you for free, I guess. But at the end of the day, right, that time cost, that knowledge cost that person. So if that person never charges you, it's okay to pay it, guys, because either, right, you pay somebody to teach you or mentor you, or you pay the street, right? You pay somebody else. And it's usually going to cost you more time, energy, and effort. So that was one thing that you mentioned that totally kind of hit me that I definitely agree with is mentoring. So while that was, yeah, definitely, I can sit here and I can ask away on stupid stuff that I've done, but we're going to leave that, you know, to my solo episodes. I think I can have 100 episodes on that. Wife, she heard me recording one. She's like, you can have like 200, hon. You can have 200 dumb things you've done. I'm like, oh, geez, thanks for the confidence there. But one thing that I do like about you is your ability to put some process and systems, getting like third-party help, like VAs, things like that, kind of putting a course together. So which brings me to the next question, right? Talk about VAs and talk about eventually, I see you definitely doing a course. I'm not sure if you are or you're in the process of doing that, but I definitely see you doing it. You're a really good communicator and you're able to like explain things pretty darn easily and put a process together. So two questions there, right? Number one is talk about the VAs, and then we'll talk about a little bit about course afterwards.
Yep. So my view on that is kind of a combination. I'm kind of a nerd. Like I wasn't. I didn't read a book until I think after college, but then that's because I didn't care. But now I care a lot and I kind of found interest. So like two books that really impacted me from like Well, I'll say three, actually. I'll cheat a little. That really impacted me from like a VA standpoint. 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. Like if anyone hasn't read that book, like I read that book at least once a quarter. It's just, it's like my Bible. Free to Focus by Michael Hyatt. And then The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Those are the three books that like, if you only read three business books, those are fine. Just read those over and over. You don't, nothing new is going to like knock you out after like those three books. But for me, like kind of my takeaway from all those, Michael Hyatt has a great line in that book. Anything that you do well in your internal business, if it's really good, you could turn it into a product or a service that then you sell. That's what he does. Like all his templates and tools he uses internally, then he turns them into a book or a product. But what's cool about that, and then what we found with like adding virtual assistants was, in order to give something to a virtual assistant, the steps needed to be documented. So like for the short-term rentals, say I can't stand analyzing deals. I just don't enjoy the process. You could probably relate to this too. You have underwriters on your team. You know, but for me, I was trying to figure out a process to just not do that. For me, I knew the steps. I just didn't like doing the steps. So I just outlined all the steps that it took for me to find a deal and analyze it quickly within like 20 minutes. And I just wrote it out in a checklist in Google Docs. And then I went on to Upwork and just basically looked for someone that was like filling a personal assistant or a virtual assistant. And then I looked at like some like analysis roles like in the Philippines. And just basically filmed a Loom video, okay, which for anyone that's just curious about that, it's just basically like screen recording software. It's really cool. And you just can film a video saying like, hey, here's what I do. Here's what I get like the numbers from and whatever. And I gave them kind of the checklist in that Google Doc. And the next thing I know, they were able to analyze deals in like 8 minutes, okay? Like not great. And it needed to be like worked on. These are single family deals, so it's pretty easy. But from there, it was just like a light bulb moment. And then it became kind of a game of like, what can you outsource for under $6 an hour? And like for me now, I probably overdo it. Like I hate email. I only want to check email once a day. So like that time that I check my email, someone else has already cleaned my inbox. They flagged the stuff that is like an actual ask of me and that they couldn't like handle themselves. And for the most part, that's like easy. If it's like being on a podcast or if it's like quest to do a phone call or stuff like that, like there's only like 10 requests that can come into your inbox. But we don't categorize them as the same 10. We like think that there are these new independent things that don't happen every day. So basically just like between those three books and then kind of building a little bit of like a checklist system, just started like playing around with different stuff like that. And then that did lead to the core stuff of like, we created a podcast. I had no clue what I was doing at the beginning, like literally no clue. It just started out with a phone call that I was on with a friend. It was after I read Joe Fairless's Best Ever Apartment Syndication. He's like, I started a podcast, blah, blah, blah. It was great. So I was like, that's cool. Let me try that. And no clue what I was doing. But then again, same thing, Michael Hyatt. And I have like Michael Gerber in my head, like turn everything into a franchise model. Like you got to repeat it. Like how does McDonald's have so many stores if like their employees are all being paid minimum wage? Like it can't be that complicated, just a system. And then from there, like we just documented all the parts of the podcast that we were doing and we didn't really love any of the stuff we were learning out there. And for us now to do a episode start to finish, including guest outreach, show notes, editing, posting on social media, it's about $9 an episode and we do a daily podcast. So like we thought that was kind of cool and I didn't really think it was anything like beyond that until I told a couple of my podcast friends who like were trying to do it themselves or just didn't like it. And for me, the only part of it that I do is literally every Thursday, I just jump on, record 5 episodes with people that I never spoke to because the VA is just reaching out to guests that were on Bigger Pockets or Joe Fairless or wherever. They schedule the time on Calendly. I record the interview with them based on just a couple blurb notes that they send me. And then that's it. Kind of like you, I don't touch it again, but like that process to me seemed kind of cool. So as an experiment, we just turned it into a course and now sell it to other podcasters. But that's just like, I'm lazy, man. Like, I don't like doing repetitive stuff. If we do it twice, I want it to be a checklist. And then from there, if it's a checklist, you could give it to a VA, you could give it to an employee, you could do it yourself and kind of just shut your mind off. Like, I don't like to think like more than once. That's it. So that's a lot of ranting there, but that's pretty much it.
A lot of people like to micromanage. So how would you say somebody who likes to kind of be in charge of everything and would just lose control saying, hey, I got to outsource this, outsource that. I know people out there that I'm not a micromanager. I'm anti-micromanager. I think I manage a little too less, in my opinion. But you know, how does somebody just let go? What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of these like little expressions I hear in my head, which is like, you know, 80% of something is better than 100% of nothing. Or like, there's a lot of these sayings. I have a friend, he's a self-proclaimed perfectionist. And that is just his excuse for procrastinating. Like that is his excuse for having fear of putting something out there. He's like, yeah, I want to do a YouTube channel, but like the lighting isn't good or the camera's good. I'm like, bro, you're just scared of that first video being a complete flop. So like, let's just cut through the bullshit and just say like, you're saying you're a perfectionist. Okay, go back to Gary V's first 100 videos on Wine Library. They were garbage. He literally looked like a serial killer and he was holding the phone literally 3 inches from his face. Grant Cardone, you look at his first 20 videos on YouTube. It's cool because they're still all on there. So for me, the advice that I take to myself, because I have imposter syndrome too. I'm a perfectionist to some extent. Like I don't want to put out crap, but what helps me is I go back and on YouTube, I just look at the people I admire, their first couple of videos. And I'm like, they stunk too. They're horrible. Yeah. Like even I go back at this interview, Javi, I'll be like, dude, this thing stunk, you know, like, cause you're going to get better. Everything gets better, but it's like, you can't make the improvement on that 30th episode without doing the first 29. So that's what I do. I just look at the people I admire. I look at their early stuff and I'm like, all right, everyone started somewhere. And then beyond that, I'm like, really, what is the root cause of my excuse? Am I saying I'm a perfectionist, but I'm really letting fear kind of block me? And then from there, I just think about, all right, if that's the case, then I need to find an accountability partner that I'm going to tell, I'm going to give $5,000 to at the end of this month if I don't get my videos out. Because now it's like, you always have to root cause analysis, at least I think, you got to root cause analysis your reasons for not doing stuff. And there's only like, again, like 5 to 10 reasons why people don't do stuff, but like figure out which one it is for you. And then there's always like a how. Like for me, I like accountability. I will do stuff for other people I wouldn't do for myself, which is why I love those type of things. And that's why I'm in masterminds or whatever. Like I'll just say, hey, if I don't get this done, I'm going to donate to the Hillary Clinton Foundation and I'm going to get my shit done because I'm not doing that. So like there's all sorts of stuff you can do, man. But
that's what I would tell people. I don't have one yet, but I'll just create one. The Procrastination, Jonathan Farber Procrastination Foundation. That's what I'll do. Yeah, dude, so I definitely have one ask of you. You like to outsource everything. So I would like to outsource arguing with my wife. I pay $6 an hour for that. I tell everybody, ever since I got married, I became a professional apologizer. So, you know, get an argument with my wife. Somebody can just argue with her for like 30 minutes and just say, honey, I'm sorry, you're right, I love you, and order some flowers. And see, that's, you know, it's, I'm okay with it. I'm definitely not a micromanager.
Man.
It's done. So I got maybe a couple more questions and then I'm going to do the naked roulette, the naked truth roulette, which basically just random questions about you kind of in a personal level, not really in a real estate level. So you might get one pass, but if not, don't take any passes on it. But for folks out there, right, you're 27 years old. You started real estate, you know, 21 in your early 20s. So somebody's saying out there, okay, great. So in my early 20s, I got a job. What is going to be the easiest way for me to go out and let's just say like an Airbnb or a rental, right? Go find one. Like what would you tell them?
Real tactical. So get the pen and paper out because I hate fluff. All right. So one, if you're 22 and you have a decent job, start looking to house hack this week. Like you might have a girlfriend, you might have a dog, does not matter. Start house hacking because you need a place to live. And like, why not? You might as well offset that cost of living. If you have a car, I would pay that off too. So like right there, you're already like halfway to financial freedom. Now we just got to work on income and like your spending can kind of be controlled after that. Now you could even eat better, or drink better, whatever. Like housing and car are people's biggest expenses. So like just knock that out. And to do that, house hack, I would just start speak realtors. I would start looking at neighborhoods. I would start looking at actual open houses and going on tours. And I would go on Zillow and Bigger Pockets and just say, hey, new to this area, looking to house hack. Can anyone recommend a realtor or broker to me? You will get recommendations, set up calls with them. And at the same time, as you're driving around these properties, you should be listening to Bigger Pockets, Javi's podcast or my podcast, and just start filling your brain with the lingo. Because if you don't know the lingo, they won't take you seriously. So you're getting smarter. You're starting to see stuff. And you're learning about areas to house hack. And again, what house hacking is buying something and renting out the other rooms or units to offset your cost of living. Okay, so you're starting to do that. And you can also put very little money down. You can put down 3.5%. So it doesn't matter what you're doing. You can come up with 3.5% of $200,000 or $300,000 and you can close on the property. And if you can't come up with that, you might not, maybe even shouldn't buy it. Or you could just get a parent to co-sign and loan with you if they just want to take a risk. But anyway, no excuse not to get started on that. So that's step one. Step two, you might have some extra money left over, or you could just start working on saving again. But my favorite strategy right now, this is almost like a cheat code, and it's so good that they're actually about to get rid of it potentially because like they knew it was too good, is buying something called a second home with a second home loan or a vacation home loan. And this is like the best thing going right now. I would start looking for these in destination markets. So we're talking about the beach, the mountains, golf courses, wherever, just mountains, stuff like that. And I said mountains twice, but I was thinking like Asheville versus like Colorado. But anyway, the cool thing about those is crazy low interest rate. The ones that I was buying this year, 2.75, 10% down, because most investment homes, you need 20% down. So you can buy it with 10% down, 2.75 interest rate, 30-year fixed rate debt, and you can use it whenever you want, and you can put it on Airbnb when you're not there. So I think that is probably the best way to get into like short-term rentals. And also like all these millennials, my friends too, like they want lifestyle kind of businesses too. They want to use the thing that makes the money, which like, hey, I'm in one of mine right now and it's on a lake and I'm going to go play golf later. Like it's kind of cool. So that's what I would do. And the same kind of strategy applies. Start talking to realtors and brokers in those areas. Start doing some research, Bigger Pockets, Facebook groups. Start talking to property managers to see kind of what they think. I also, a little sneaky hack, I would recommend reaching out to other hosts in the area and sending them a message and saying, hey, I'm actually thinking about buying this area. Any chance you would consider co-hosting or managing another property? If they say yes, great. If they don't, maybe you could still talk to them and get a lot of information from them because they know what's good and bad in the area. So from there, then it's kind of the same thing. You got to run the numbers. Tool to run the numbers called AirDNA. You can look up the address and you can look at comps in the area. So that's a must. And then you can go tour the property. But if the numbers work, you're putting 10% down. And in a lot of cases, these destination properties, they come furnished. So that also kind of cuts down on your cash you're going to need to bring to the deal, which is good for beginners. And then another little sneaky hack is you should always try to negotiate some closing costs paid on these. So let's say the property is even listed for $300,000, offer $305,000, but $5,000 in closing. It's the same to them, but it's $5,000 less that you need to bring to the table. All the strategies I like, I want to bring as little as possible, have the highest returns. And then by doing that, you can take ownership of the property. And then if you don't want to do it yourself, you can find local property management, which is pretty straightforward. Just Googling, Facebook groups, Yelp reviews, and then doing some interviews. And if you want to do it yourself, it's totally possible actually, because Airbnb takes care of the two hardest parts of being a landlord: finding tenants and collecting money. Then you just need to find like a handy person, or your cleaning crew can kind of be like your quasi property manager. They'll take pictures of the property every time they turn it. Yeah, then you're in the game. And a good second home in one of these areas could net you anywhere from, let's say, $1,000 to $3,000 a month. And for a lot of people, if you have that car paid off and you're house hacking at home, that might be enough to cancel out your cost of living. And then you're out of the game. And then you could just start working for Javi and you could start running his numbers and you could learn about multifamily. So that's like very down and dirty, but like a high level, anyone could just start doing that today.
Yeah. So that was one of the things I was going to take from that is today, if you got $5,000-$10,000 in the bank, you know, you got a job, right? You qualify for a loan. There's a lot of options out there for loans. You can get started like right now. Start doing some house hacking, buy yourself an Airbnb somewhere, run the numbers. Jonathan gave really good links. They'll be posted on the show notes. Like AirDNA. What is that one? Yeah, right?
AirDNA is great. Yeah, it pulls comps directly from Airbnb and VRBO. So it's real comps.
Yeah, which is great. So you can kind of run your numbers and be like, okay, great. I'm going to be in all in at this house for $10,000 and it's going to make me X amount of dollars. Like, do I feel comfortable with that? Everybody's different on their investment. Everybody has an investor personality. So if that works, you can get started in the next 90 days. You can go to Jonathan's podcast, Millennials in Real Estate. Is that what it's called?
Millennial Millionaires in Real Estate.
Millennials Millionaires in Real Estate. You should have done three M's somehow.
I know. It's a little twisty, man, but you got it.
Same Facebook group as well.
Facebook group. Yep. And yeah.
You follow him, and you coming up with a course anytime soon?
Right now, it's mainly that podcast course, but we might do some mini courses, even like how to grow a Facebook group to your first 3,000 members in 1 year. That's cool. Or like, you know, just like little stuff. Just like, I heard a good expression, man. Grant Cardone actually said it, because he's always pushing like $29.99, like ebook. Like he's like pounding it. He's like, dude, people that don't pay attention. And that really stuck with me, man, because how much free shit is out there? It's one of my favorite expressions, man. If it was about the information, the librarians would be billionaires with six-pack abs. You need accountability. You need the information structured in a way that actually works for you. And then like you would need to be invested in it and do it. So like, yeah, I mean, the courses is good. You can make a little extra money, but like, I just like being around people that are like into it and they want to get better and they actually want to like use the stuff that's out there. Cause like, I mean, I post it all on YouTube also, but like some people, they want to pay for Equinox to go to the gym. So some people want the information and feel invested.
Yeah. Or just a little more organized, right? Not just, you know, all over the place. It's some kind of sequence or just organized. So that's cool. I mean, it's awesome.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate your time. So now we're going to bring out the Naked Truth Roulette and I'm going to make a, I'm going to give you four random questions. I don't know what the questions are going to be, but here we go. And let me see. You can't see my screen, but no, I'm going to show you my screen. So you can Scout's Honor. Oh, actually, I was never a scout.
You can this see is legit. By the way, the name is amazing. I Naked forgot what it was until we jumped on. So good.
Yep. All right. Let's see. The first question is going to be, this is how people can get to know you on a personal level. All right. Let's see. Question. All right. When something breaks, do you replace it or do you fix it?
Oh, that's tough. I'd say most times these days we will fix it.
Fix it. My wife's like, why don't you answer that question yourself? I said, I don't know. Maybe someday.
Yeah. What do you think, Javi? What would you do? Break? Would you buy it or fix it?
Send me more than 5 minutes. I'll buy a new one.
That's true too. That's me.
All right. Oh. Next one. Have you ever cried at a movie? Come on, man.
Dude, I think I have. Now I'm trying to think what movie was it. It might have been something cheesy. It might have been like, I remember what movie it was. It was, what's that movie with Adam Sandler? Bed Bath & Beyond. He like, click? Oh, you ever seen that one? Click?
Yeah, yeah. He's going back in time or something.
Dude, that was sad. Yeah. But then it's all fake. But I think I definitely cried in that.
All right.
Not ashamed.
All right. Next one. See what we got here. Look at that. Maybe not. Okay. All right. This is a good one. We missed it. How about our favorite food?
I got to go with Long Island Steakhouse, man. I'll shout out the one place that I just love, Rothman Steakhouse. My dad used to take us there like every couple months, and it was great.
Oh, that's awesome. Can't go wrong with the steakhouse. All right. Last question. Last question. Oh, if you could take any celebrity on a date, who would it be?
Dude, I don't know her name, but she was, all right, let me just think. I'll go with Natalie Portman. She's from Long Island, Jewish. That's right on my wheelhouse.
Hey, there you go, man. Of course. It's got to be up Northeast, huh? All right. That's good. Steakhouse.
That's right.
Your steak is from the Northeast and so are your women. Okay.
You know it, Javi. You know it.
Man, it was awesome having you on the show. We talked about how do you quit your corporate America job. We talked about one of the biggest issues you had, which was partnering up and having the wrong partners. And then we also talked about a little bit what you do and kind of the house hacking and the Airbnb, giving somebody some information how to do it on their own, starting off, and how to find your first deal. Like you can find your first deal right now in the next 90 days. You can definitely get something done. So I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Follow Jonathan on social media. I'll put all his links up here on the show notes, but I'm going to read off a few and follow the podcast, Millennials Millionaire Podcast, right?
And Millennial Millionaires through Real Estate.
Yep. Real Estate, all right. And then we have the Facebook group, which is the Facebook group. Go ahead and pitch that out.
Same thing, Millennial Millionaire through Real Estate Facebook group.
All right, you have any other social media handles you want to throw out there?
The main two that we're doing more on now is YouTube and TikTok.
All right.
So YouTube, longer stuff, like screen sharing, walking through, and then TikTok, a little more fun stuff, a little bit more personality, and just quick, man, for all my fellow ADDers out there, 30 seconds or less, and we'll just knock it out.
There you go. For sure. It's got to be 30 seconds or less. Awesome, Jonathan. It was awesome having you. And this is another episode of The Naked Truth. Make sure you don't lose your shirt. Time consuming, it can be very scary. It could be like trying to get somewhere without a roadmap. So that's why I created this due diligence list when I buy a property. When I buy an apartment building, even a mobile home park, you can use it for mostly pretty much any commercial property. But this one specifically is for a multifamily. It could be a 6-unit. It could be a 600 unit. You can use it for what you like. So go ahead and sign up, put your name, email. I'll send you the free link to my due diligence. This is what I've used to buy hundreds and hundreds of units, if not thousands of units. So sign up, you get my link. You get an Excel sheet as well. And also we use the software, project management software, monday.com. Feel free to sign up for a free trial. I do have an affiliate link. You don't pay any extra. They just pay me a small fee. Don't have to use it. You have the Excel spreadsheet, but if you use monday.com, it's actually a lot better, a lot smoother, a lot prettier, and you can do a whole bunch of other stuff. There's even a video there I created in the link. So check the link, sign up, and this is my giveaway for you guys. Thank you so much. Take care.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.